This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
So, this afternoon, I would like to talk to you about three things. Number one, some of the qualities, the personal qualities that are needed to use technology effectively. Number two, some of the strategical approaches to help us use technology effectively. And then number three, some practical examples of how this should look in real life. But first of all, I need four volunteers from the audience. Yes. James, come on up. Four people. I will not hurt you. Two more. Yes, please. Thank you. Okay, so to begin our talk about technology, I would like to start with the tale of four brothers in an ancient land. So our first brother here, whose name is Roberto, is the oldest of his family. And Roberto was always drawn to causes. Roberto was always the kind of person who could attach himself to sacrifice and service. Roberto loved his country. He loved his king. And as a young man, he enlisted himself in the army. Roberto, take your weapon. Now, Roberto was an outstanding combatant in the army. Not necessarily because he was the most skillful fighter, but because he was tenacious. He was brave. He was purposeful. He would not turn his back in a battle. He would not leave a battlefield with wounded comrades behind. Roberto was an honorable man. Go ahead and pull your sword out of its sheath. He knew how to use power safely, effectively, but appropriately. He was always respectful to women. He was always kind to children. He could always be counted on to keep his word and to fulfill his promises. And so because of that, people trusted him. And very soon he rose to the highest ranks of the Royal Guard because of these qualities. Now, the next brother in the family was Samuel. And Samuel could never quite understand his older brother's propensity. And Roberto, you can stay over here so I can talk about Samuel. So, he could never understand his older brother's propensity to be attracted to causes. He could never quite understand what the point of all this sacrifice was about. For him, life was about having fun. And life came fairly easy for Samuel. There were many opportunities that presented themselves, and generally he took them. He managed a general store in his town, and he became rather wealthy. But there was a fatal flaw, because as Samuel started to exercise this feel-good attitude about life, he got involved with drinking alcohol. And at first, it was just fun. It was what everyone was doing, and everything felt under control. But as life progressed, he found himself turning more and more often to alcohol. When he was bored, when he was frustrated, when he was tired, when he was disappointed. And before long, what was exciting at first soon became a controlling habit. And although he did what he could to get by in life, it was really just to get the next drink. He was totally addicted and hooked, and his life spiraled out of control. his relationships disintegrated, and he spent he finished his life as a very miserable man. Thank you, Samuel. Now, the next brother we will call Francisco. You don't know why I'm going to pull out of this bag. Are you scared? So, Francisco, how's that? Francisco was always attracted to the beauty of the natural world. All around him, he saw dazzling shapes and colors and just gorgeous sunsets and beautiful animals and birds and flowers. And he was, and as a very young person, he felt an impulse to take these pictures that captured his mind and be able to express them himself. And so painting and art was difficult at first, but he persisted. And after years and years of practice, his hard labor paid off. He became an incredibly talented painter. Paper would just come to life underneath his brush. He'd capture the most fine details and the nuances of colors and shades. And pretty soon people from all around came to hire him to do their portraits and to purchase his paintings to decorate their walls. Thank you, Francisco. The last brother we'll call Franklin. So Franklin never deviated to the extremes of his other brothers. He was kind of a restless person, and he liked to travel. As he traveled, he would pick up odd jobs here and there, and he did a lot of hard work. But after a while, hardship struck Franklin, and you can place this over your head. Actually, there's a hole. It goes over your shoulders. Eventually, his body wearied of all of the hard labor, and he had no marketable skills. He couldn't perform anything other than hard manual labor, and he already wasted most of the opportunities to learn what was valuable, and so eventually he found himself out of work and on the streets. He went from place to place, surviving off of the good graces of others, and eventually to finding his livelihood out of picking through the refuse, the trash heaps of the towns that he came to. So, thank you, Franklin. So here we have four personalities: a warrior, a drunkard, an artist, and a tramp. And what can these personalities teach us about the effective use of technology? We'll get into that in a moment. For a while, for now, you can put your props back. And if you could go to the back of the room and help Jared guess the handouts, that would be fantastic. Thank you. Yes, give them a round of applause. Thank you very much. So as I wrestled with the implications of technology that is proliferating itself all around us in all sorts of ways, all kinds of new gadgets and powerful computers and incredible amounts of software and the ways that software can be used, I wrestled with what it takes to be the kind of person who can use these things effectively. And I believe that this can be illustrated. My conclusion is that the effective use of technology can be illustrated primarily by the intersection of two significant qualities. And the first quality I am calling agency. And this quality is, by the way, what I consider to be the most significant quality when it comes to technology. Agency is a bit of a technical term. It's not something that we talk about very frequently, but I think it can be distilled fairly and understood fairly effectively by thinking about a person who is principled and purposeful. Somebody who lives for a cause. Agency. And in this example that I gave you of these men, if we, and I'm sorry, we are not capturing the arrows here, but we see that there's one of these men who has a lot of agency and another man who's completely lacking agency. Does that make sense? So there's our stereotypes. Living for something that matters. The second quality I'm calling aptitude. Aptitude is skillfulness. It is proficiency and perceptivity. It is honing and refining your skills. So, if we take these two qualities and we map them on a quadrant, it ends up looking like this. Agency from left to right, from little to most, aptitude from top to bottom. And in all reality, we, depending on the area of life that we're talking about and depending on the place we're in our journey, we probably aren't going to find ourselves immediately at one of the points in this quadrant. We'll probably find ourselves in one of the areas between these extremes. And I believe these qualities work together and fit together very well. And so, what are these qualities and what do I mean by them? Well, let's think about a person who has very little agency and very little aptitude, very little skill and purpose. That person is the kind of person where life just sort of washes over them. Whatever happens, happens. If something feels good, do it. If something is hard, don't do it. If something costs, you know, so this is the lowest, the least common denominator right here. And this is the area in which we most commonly find addiction. When life is just, whatever happens, happens. This is, in one way or another, what usually happens to those kinds of people. Conversely, think about the kind of person who is very, very good at something, extremely skilled, but it's not really for something that actually matters. They aren't able to utilize that for something that really matters. That is what we call people who are obsessed. They're totally inundated with what they're doing, and they've allowed it to define them, and they've allowed it to control them. That is an obsessed person. And so somebody with little agency and lots of aptitude is obsessed. Conversely, now here again, somebody who has lots of agency, they really want to do something that matters. They care about living a life of purpose. They care about causes that matter, but they don't know how to deliver. They can't perform what needs to be performed to actually make something happen. That is what we call the quadrant of limitation. So much potential, but so little capacity to deliver. And so my point here today is to grab your attention to push it towards this top right quadrant as the ultimate goal that we should have when we think about interfacing with the tools that we have in the natural world and with technology specifically, the place of actualization, where we are living as effective people, doing things that matter, and we have the skills to follow through. If you turn to the back of your handouts, I've given four words here for each of these quadrants that I believe are the common words that we use to call people who fit in these quadrants in relation to technology. And so we start with the media addict here in the bottom left, going in the same order. This is the person who has allowed all of this explosion of the internet and smartphones and instant messaging and everything to just fill up their lives, and they don't know how to use it for anything effective, but they're totally hooked to it. That is a media addict. Bad place to be. If you move up, straight up to the top left, this is where you find the technophiles. Or to break it down, the nerds, the tacky guys, they used to call them computer geeks. And I just admitted this is where I've often found myself. Somebody who is obsessed with the thing, the stuff, and what it can do, and they're really skilled at it, but the question at the end of the day is the technology, is the person making an impression in technology and using it for something effectively, or is technology simply making an impression on them? Technology is first on the left, and the person is primary on the right. So in the bottom right, then, we have those who are computer illiterate, would love to be able to use computers for effective things, but simply don't know how, and so find themselves constantly limited in what could be possible. And then, of course, in the top right is the power user. And this is what I want to invite you all into today. Be a power user. Be someone who knows how to use tools effectively and cares about using them purposefully and in ways that honor God and make a difference. Very quickly now, just to put some of this in perspective, I'd like to go through the rest of this handout in the bottom. Does everyone have a handout? Okay. So the left side and the right side of this quadrant are two under two different titles, intoxication on the left, proaction on the right. And I found a very interesting list from a book called High Tech, High Touch by Don Nasbitt, where he makes the case that we as Americans are technologically intoxicated. And he has a lot of interesting perspectives. He applies it to a lot of different areas of life. And he wrote this book, interestingly enough, in 1999. That's a long time ago in terms of technology, right? But I'm amazed at his perception here. And if these things were true in 1999, how much more so today? So let's go over this list very quickly. Number one, traits of technology intoxication. We favor the quick fix from religion to nutrition. Technology brings all of these things easily and quickly, and we've adapted to it, and that's what we want everywhere. Number two, we fear and worship technology. We can't seem to get enough of it. But on the other hand, we're also often intimidated by it, frustrated by it. We hate the effects that it has on our lives. Number three, we blur the distinction between what is real and what is fake. Technology brings us so many simulated experiences, easy push-button solutions. But is a friend on Facebook a real friend? Is that a real relationship? Well, ask yourself. And this applies to many, many other categories. Number four, we accept violence as normal. So we as Americans have become alarmingly desensitized to violence because of all that the media has brought our way. Five, we love technology as a toy. Leisure, my friends, should be profitable. It should be purposeful. And technology isn't coming to us in those packages. And number six, we live our lives distanced and distracted. So between the news flash and the notifications and the instant messages and all of the flickering screens and the beeping and the lights, we find ourselves distracted, and it's harder and harder and harder to focus if we surround ourselves by these things. So when I thought about what is the opposite of these things and what does it mean to live with proaction rather than intoxication, I was impressed with how these are really very old concepts and it's very old ideals. And I think the Apostle Paul talks about these very well. And I just made some summaries of sections of 1 Corinthians in the bottom as counterpoints to these points. So number one, we favor what is substantive and lasting. So ask yourself, do you always need the latest and greatest, the fastest, the shiniest? Is that what makes life worthwhile? What really makes life worthwhile? And it's not defined by technology. Number two, we combat ineffectiveness in serving others. The Apostle Paul cared deeply that his life would be effective, that he would be able to accomplish what God had called him to do. And it wasn't just in some arbitrary measure of success. It was about the people that he was serving. And we should care about the same thing and specifically about how we use technology. Number three, we recognize God in everything. So this might be a little bit harder to connect together, but the point here is that in the mind of the apostle, God was the realest real, and everything else was measured by that reality. And talk about putting things into perspective. That's a powerful paradigm. Number four, we value the practice of love above everything else. When you see something on a screen, you are practicing the thoughts, the emotions, the feelings that go along with those experience with whatever is being portrayed. So ask yourself, am I valuing love in what I'm practicing? Five, we choose what is healthy and helpful. And that has a lot to do with leisure. Six, we live our lives in light of the age to come. Talk about putting things into perspective once again. Building the kingdom of God is the greatest purpose, the greatest goal and cause that anyone could ever be a part of. And it certainly has a lot of implications when we think about how and why we should use technology. So, if you find yourself in the left side of this quadrant, then it's time to think seriously about the ways that you're allowing things to make their impression on you rather than you using things for purposes that really matter. And to move across this middle divide just means that you have to be less infatuated. You have to be less impressed, less wrapped up in the things of this world and actually rise above them and think about what it is that matters. It takes a lot of purposefulness. But what does it take to get from the bottom up to the top? That's what I would like to explore next with you. And you can open up your handout to the first pane on the right-hand side. Effective habits for building digital literacy. Digital literacy is what I'm defining, the leap from the bottom to the top. And to make this process effective, we start out asking a lot of questions. It doesn't start sitting down at a computer. It starts by simply defining what it is that matters, what it is that you're trying to accomplish, asking a lot of who, what, why, when questions, and then charting out a course of action going forward. So, one of the issues that we face in this paradigm is that technology has all of these appeals and stimulations above and beyond its usefulness. And I'm glad that the conversation is increasing nowadays on technology addiction and the harmful effects that it's having on us, because it's sending off dopamines in our brains. It's making it's having a substance abuse kind of effect on us if we let it. And that needs to be thought about. And so one of the reasons I'm starting here when talking about using technology effectively is just because we have this appetite. And it's so easy when we come to technology to start with appetite and then try to find a purpose. And what I'm inviting you to do today is start with purpose and then find ways to make it happen. Does that make sense? So, number one is dream and define. What is it that you're trying to accomplish and that you're hoping can be helped with technology? So we begin with envisioning the end game. What is the desired outcome of your project? And we're gonna narrow this down to saying any specific objective that you have, any specific need that you have, anything that you want to see in your organization or your personal life, whatever, related to technology, ask yourself, what is the end game? And technology is not in view here, okay? We're talking about the real world and real world effects. You want to have a more organized life. You want to be able to communicate more effectively. You want to solve a problem. You want to optimize a process. Talk about it as it relates to the real world. Maybe you want to mobilize people. You want to produce something that is innovative. All of those are good end games. We move on next to pulling the people. Decide who it is that is either your audience or your team. think about the people who are going to be involved in this technology, in whatever you're trying to accomplish with technology, and think about what they need. And talk to them. Ask them what is going to be effective. You don't start here by saying, oh, I'm going to create, because I want to communicate something, I'm going to create a video. Well, what are you trying to communicate? What is the end game? Are the people you're trying to communicate to going to be impressed with a video? Is that going to mobilize them? Or should it be another means? So start by end game, pull the people, ask what they need, and then we get to this big question of purpose. Why does this matter anyhow? And this is an opportunity to fit your activities inside of that God-sized perspective. Why does this matter? How does this affect and relate to things that are actually significant and worthwhile? Number two, design and designate. So we now know the purpose, and now we need to summarize the solution. So now technology starts to enter the picture. You want to have a more organized office? Well, so you want to use technology to help you solve some of these problems. So now you start to summarize, but still think in very real world terms, okay? Technology is only effective if it can help us in the real world. We are real physical people. And so you don't start out by saying, oh, I want to create a spreadsheet. You say, no, I want to have a way to effectively track my students' attendance. I want to have the solution to my problem will be a poster that I will put up at church that will communicate certain calls. Or, you know, this is where we can start to get more specific, but let's not get so specific that we jump straight to the nitty-gritties. But as we start thinking about the nitty-gritties and we start thinking about what they could look like, one of the tools that I find the most effective for actually designing a solution is something that is hundreds of years old. It's not high tech at all. It's just a piece of paper and a pen. So you want a way to track your students' attendance? Well, what is the information you're going to be keeping track of? How could you foresee that being laid out in a way that's going to make sense and be sustainable and give you valuable feedback? You want to create a presentation? Well, start drawing it out. You want to create a poster? Pick up a piece of paper and make it happen. You want to have an organized office? Well, what are the things you're organizing? Write them down. How could they be categorized and organized effectively? Start thinking about the different kinds of things. Write it on a piece of paper. This is incredibly, incredibly valuable, because when it comes to actually opening up the computer and you feel intimidated by your computer and you're not sure exactly if you're going to do the right things, but you don't even know exactly what it's going to look like in the end, what you're trying to accomplish, well, then you're going to be doubly frustrated as you try to design your solution and learn your tool at the same time. So draw out the details. And another thing I love for this is a whiteboard. If you work with a team, whiteboards are beautiful. Once again, it's low tech. We start with low tech. Just put a blackboard or a whiteboard on the wall. Start doodling out your solution. And this is a very common thing. This is not innovative with me at all. People talk about back of the napkin $1 million ideas as you know, it's famous for businessmen to be eating out together in a restaurant and they get an idea and they start scratching it out on the napkin, right? Start with the basics and figure out where to go from there. Number C then is scope out the skills. And what I'm looking at here is that the skill is not the tool. You don't start by saying, I want to be able to be organized effectively. I want to have a way to put all of my documents in a way that makes sense, and so I need to buy an iPad. Once again, a fool with a tool is still a fool. Your tool does not solve your problems. Think about the skills that are going to be needed to accomplish what you need to accomplish. And this, and all this takes, you don't have to be an expert in these skills, but just by acknowledging the skills, I need to think about effective communication. I need to think about organizing. I need to think about what it means to have a logical workflow where people can work together effectively. Identify those skills and think about what it means to learn those skills and to grow in those skills. Once again, the tool specifically is not in focus at this point. But once you've identified those things, then you can start to think about how computers can help you solve these problems. And that's the inside of your handout. If you turn now to the middle of your brochures. So, column A then, on the left side, own your workspace. There are many ways we can think about computers. I like to think about them as a workspace. This is a place for me to get things done that actually matter. And it starts with the hardware. As simple as understanding the device that you own. So, first of all, the keyboard. Do you know keyboarding? If you are working on computers for a significant part of your life, your work, your personal life, whatever, and you don't know keyboarding, well, then it's time to learn. There's really no excuse for working on a computer year after year after year and wasting time hunting and pecking for keys. You might be a busy person, you might think that you don't have time, but the reality is you're going to waste far more time over all of those years hunting and pecking for keys rather than just taking some time, even if it's just 5 minutes every day, to practice keyboarding. And there's lots of free websites and applications out there that will teach you how to do your keyboard. But it gets beyond that. And the second point is just study the hardware. Figure out what are the different buttons on my machine and what do they do? I can't tell you how many people have come to me and they say, oh, my internet doesn't work. And I say, well, did you check the Wi-Fi switch? Well, I didn't know it had a Wi-Fi switch. Well, pick up your computer and look at it. Figure out what the buttons are. If it's not instinctive, take a guess, push them, jiggle them back and forth, see what happens. You won't break anything. Figure it out. It's your machine. It's supposed to yield to your will and not you to it. When you are intimidated, you're not in control. Second of all is order the operating system. It is amazing how much junk comes on computers nowadays. And I think it is getting a little bit better, but it's still phenomenal how many things are shipping with computers. Actually, it's not getting better. Windows 10 is a classic example, okay? 20, 30 applications that you don't need and you never will, and they're just in the way. And when I step into one of those computers, I feel like I'm walking into a cluttered workspace. There's all these things that are asking for my attention. They want updates. They want me to sign up. They want me to experience why their subscription is the best subscription. And guess what? You don't need that stuff. Get rid of it. Clear your workspace. Otherwise, you will never feel at home. You will never feel like you own it. Figure out how to delete it. And if you need it in the future, you can reinstall it. It's not hard. So clean it up. And two there, B is settle the settings. If something's not behaving in your computer, if it's doing something it's not supposed to be doing, or it's not doing something it is supposed to be doing, well then figure out how to change it. And usually it's a Google search away. Or just open up the control panel and explore what are the different parts and what do they mean. Take some time to feel like you really understand what is this tool I'm using and how does it work. Number three then, this should be started before you begin significant projects, is make sure you have a good backup plan in place. And people don't learn this the hard way like I did. Computers will fail. Hard drives will crash. Get a backup plan in place. And this can be as simple as get an external hard drive, plug it into your computer, set up the backup system so that it's going to keep things backed up, or connect to a cloud service. There's lots of ones nowadays, Dropbox and OneDrive and iCloud and all of that. Just make sure that you have double copies of your file and don't put them only one place at one time. Now, number four then is spread the screen. So your screen is your workspace when it comes to getting things done on the computer. And this is really significant to take ownership of what happens here. First of all, I have here there first about arranging your applications. So many times when we're working on computers, we're putting applications side by side, or we want to have multiple applications that we can use at the same time. Modern computers come with this feature called window snapping, which is where you take a window and you slam it against the side of your screen, and it fills that half of the screen. And from there, you can choose a different window that you put on the other side. This is a great way of optimizing your workspace. Always maximize your windows when you're working on that. If you need them side by side, make them side by side. And furthermore, if you need to, I have under there multiply monitors. It's been proven that computer users are more effective automatically by adding a second monitor to your computer, because we find ourselves limited by small computers. When you have more monitors, you have more space to get things done. So if that's a part of your work, I encourage you, a significant part of your work, I encourage you to consider it. The middle section here I call Entangle the Web. So this is a little different than some of the others because it has the internet specifically in view. But this is a big subject and I want to touch on it. First of all, learn how to take advantage of your web browser window. So the way I like to think about windows is when I have a window open, I have a specific task in mind and that window is going to be dedicated to that task. But then these browsers come with multiple tabs. One way that I often learn about something is I will, let's go to computer networking on Wikipedia. Okay, to learn about something that I don't understand, I'll open the article, I'll read and read and read so I get to something that I don't understand. And when I get to something I don't understand, I'll open that in a new tab. And now I have multiple sites open in different tabs. I can go and read about them. And when I find something there I don't understand, I'll open that up. Okay, same task, but this is a way of keeping track of the different places you're at instead of having this long forward and backward history list. Same task, and this is giving me a view into my different activities. And when I'm done with those sites, I can close them down again. Frequently we find ourselves wanting to do things on computers that we can't do or with the internet. Web browsers have this amazing thing called add-ons where you can search for hundreds and thousands of extensions that will do things like modify a printout, for example. That's a common thing. Modify print or block advertisements we'll talk about in a little bit. I'm sorry, guys. I spent too long in my introduction. I'm going to have to move really, really fast right now. So buckle your seatbelts. Two, the search engine. Many times it's hard to find things online that you really want. Well, look for the advanced search and use all of the different options that are given you in that advanced search. It's really powerful, and when you use the advanced search, it'll teach you about how the kinds of things that you can type in, the kinds of filters you can specify that can become very common for finding specific results that you're looking for on the internet. Just like I just opened all those tabs, and all those different articles and different tabs, this is a way that I also think about searching the internet. When you search for something online, go to Google or whatever you use, type in your search results. Don't just go into one site at a time and come back out and then to another one. And now where am I? What did I hit last? I don't know. Open up all your different search results in a different tab, and then you close down all the ones that are irrelevant and don't relate to what you're looking for. And you're left with just a few tabs that have just the things that are relevant to your search. Learn to do that very quickly. Number three is the crud. And we all know there's a lot of crud online. Well, the number one way to stay out of the crud online is don't even type certain things into the search engine. Don't go certain places that you know you shouldn't. But unfortunately, it doesn't end there. There's a lot of content online that we don't even ask for. We don't even want to see. Well, the number one way I recommend to get around that is install an ad blocker on your browser every single time. Because I understand some people's need to make money that way, but that doesn't it doesn't excuse the content they put on there. Install an ad blocker, and that'll clean up your web. Furthermore, some browsers offer a reader view. When you're reading a news article or something and it's giving you all this clutter on the side, well, go to the reader view and it pulls out just the text of the article, and you can read it in a very comfortable way. I'm going to skip the bottom because you can check out those solutions on yourself. Okay, wield your weapons. Last here. So when it comes time to select solutions, ask your people what they need. Figure out what your requirements are. Write them down and tally. Here's an example of how we did this with library software at Faith Builders. We wrote all our different requirements on a spreadsheet. Then we took all of the different vendors that we found that claimed to offer those requirements, and we made a scorecard. Who actually fits this purpose and who doesn't? And then we found the or who actually fits our requirements and who doesn't, and then we found the solution we want. Second thing I want to say there is connect your computers together as much as possible. Not just because it's convenient, but because shared workspaces provide more incentive to keep them organized and purposeful. So when you have teams work together, think about how to organize your data together in ways that make sense. And try to avoid double entry. Every time we get a student at Faith Builders, we enter their information into about 5 different systems. Okay, that's really time consuming, and there's nothing inherently productive about that. But because we found, this thing fits this job and this thing fits that job, stuff can get so scattered. And eventually I'm hoping that we'll have one integrated system at Faith Builders. Well, as you guys go out and build solutions, think about having all of the different pieces integrated together and ask your vendors and whatnot, can they do that? I will talk yet about shortcuts, and I'll let you explore the rest. Shortcuts are extremely valuable because you can learn them with muscle memory. You don't have to find them in the interface. Learn all of the common shortcuts. The common ones, copy, paste, select all, undo, redo. These apply to every program. And furthermore, other programs have specific shortcuts that apply to them. If you want to find these, go online and search for the Excel shortcut cheat sheet or a Word cheat sheet, and you'll find these beautiful little infographics that you can print out and stick next to your monitor, and it'll make you so much faster if you learn these things, okay? So there's a few practical details. So we've explored some of the personal qualities that are needed. We've talked about some of the strategy approaches, and we have looked at a few practical details. Thank you so much for your time. We'll hand it over to Jared now.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.